Well, Kutub, and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shurim Adaf Yomi. We're now beginning the study of the second parak of Masechet Ketubot, and Daf Tet Vav Amud Bet, the bottom of the Amud. And we're really continuing on a theme that was the second half of the first parak, and this will carry us all the way through the second parak, and that is the issue of Ne'amanut, when there are conflicting claims about status, who was believed, and what constitutes the grounds for credibility. And we will already be touching on some more of the details in our Mishnah. So a woman was divorced, a widow, and now there is a contest between her and either her ex-husband or the estate about the value of the ketubah. We already established in the first parak that an almana gets a ketubah of 100 and a betulah of 200. He married betulah nesatani. She claims that when she was married, she was a betulah. Umer lo ki ela almana nesatich. And he, so we're now talking about a case of divorce, obviously if she's widowed, there's nobody claiming I married you at a certain state, says I married you as an almana. So now he's claiming he should pay 100, she says 200. If she has witnesses that at the wedding she walked out wearing a henuma, and we'll see in the beginning of the next podcast what that is. But suffice to say now, it's a kind of garment that is worn uniquely by betulot, uniquely for girls who are getting married for the first time. Virosha parua, and her hair was unbound. Tuvatam matayim, that testimony is good enough because that is done only at weddings of people getting married, of women getting married for the first time. Yachon broko mer avchilu koyot raya. He brings another proof, and he says he brings another custom that says that even handing out toasted corn, toasted grain, which was a custom that they would do at the wedding of Tuvah, that's also proof. So witnesses come and say, we were at the wedding, remember they handed out this toasted grain, that's proof that she gets 200. Now, a very enigmatic statement comes in. Umod Rabbi Yeshua, Yeshua was not in our Mishnah. Umod Rabbi Yeshua, b'omer l'chaveru sadeh zu shel avicha hayta. L'kachti haymenu, and if a fellow comes up to another guy and says, listen, the field that I have, it was your father's, and I bought it from him, shehu ne'eman. That establishes credibility. Why? So I put it on to the beginning of the handout, shapesh asaru apesh yitir. This is an important principle that will carry us through the next few Mishnayot. Hapesh asar opesh yitir literally means the mouth that bound is the mouth that unbinds, or the mouth that forbids is the mouth that permits. Meaning, since we have no other information indicating that this field belonged to anybody but this fellow, and he is the one who volunteers the information and says, yes, it belonged to another fellow, but I bought it from him, that same mouth that bound him, meaning that claimed that it belonged to somebody else, has credibility now to say that I bought it. However, but if there are witnesses that this originally belonged to the other fellow's father, and then all the fellow is claiming is I bought it from him, and he's not believed to say that without other edim that he bought it, or without a star or something else. So in other words, when I am the only source of the information that works against my interest, and I volunteer that information, that establishes my credibility for the claim that is in my interest. Because I could have said nothing, and you wouldn't have known that it belonged to your father, and I could keep it. But if there is independent testimony that indicates that claim that which is against my self-interest, such as it belonged to your father, then I no longer have the support of what we call Pesha Asar. Good. Now, Tama Deikaidim, the Gemara immediately points out that and observes that it's only because she has witnesses that claim that she wore hinuma, or according to Yochanan Bruka, that they were handing out a certain kind of candies or whatever. That's why she's believed. Taleka Eidim Malayim, if not, then the husband's believed. So now, Tanan Stama Deikam Galio, it sounds like this is favoring the position of Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnayot that we had in the first parak, who claims that a woman is not believed in such claims in favor of her ketubah, and therefore you believe the husband. The only reason here that we believe the woman is because she has testimony. So that seems to mean that we're favoring Rabbi Yeshua, and that's problematic because we've already had several Amoraim, Shmuel or Nachman, say that halacha is Kerbe Gamliel. The answer is De'ayirum Gamliel Hamar Imahim. Not because Gamliel says she's believed. The answer is Afilu Tenor Gamliel. Even Rabbi Gamliel would agree with this. Ad Kanokam Gamliel Hatam. Why did Rabbi Gamliel say in all four of those cases Mukat Eitz, or when the rape happened, or who the guy she was talking with, or who the guy who got her pregnant was, at the Bel Bari Veshema? Because she is a Bari and the other guy is a Shema. Avahacha Bari Bari Lo Amar. Here she's claiming Betulah. He's claiming absolutely not. You're an Almanah. And they both have Bari Bari, and therefore there's no reason to take out more money from his estate based on her Bari against his Bari unless she has witnesses. Now, with the Kari La, my Kari La, and I'll stop and think about it, our answer was so simple, why did we ever have a question? Like, why did he say that? Ha Bari or Bari Hu? That's very obvious. The answer is, Kevan de Rav Noshim Betulot Nisot. Since most women who get married as Betulot. I mean, most women don't get married a second time. Kibari Yosham Adami. Therefore, his claim that you're an Almana is a weakened claim because it goes against the mainstream or the majority. Now, Hachinam Yistabra, we want to support that. Why? I mean, Tani Modar of Yeshua. Remember that enigmatic line in the middle of the Mishnah, which really is Mishnah Bet, by the way, but you see why the editors put it together, that Rabbi Yeshua concurs or concedes to whom and about what? If Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah would agree that the guy's not believed, Shapir, then I understand why Rabbi Yeshua is then conceding to him. In other words, Rabbi Gamliel concedes to Rabbi Yeshua, if it's Bar Bari, we don't believe her. And Rabbi Yeshua then concedes back, I'll agree with you, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel, in a case of Pesha Asa. Aleitmar, lo I Rabbi Gamliel Moda, but if you claim that Rabbi Gamliel is not Moda, that when it's Bari Bari, we don't believe her, Yeshua Aman Moda, so who's Rabbi Yeshua conceding to? The flow of the Mishnah is odd. It's odd in any case. So the answer is Misa, the deflection of this is Misa Rabbi Yeshua Ha Pirkin Kai. You think that Rabbi Yeshua is responding to the Mishnah Aleph, the beginning of this parak? Ha Pirkin Kamakai. Amigo Kai, Ha Pirkin Kamakai. He's responding to the Migo that you had in the first parak. And he's and that's what he's responding to. Ahe, which of the cases? Now remember, we had four cases. In order, they were the first case was she claimed that the onus happened while she was betrothed to the guy. In the second case, she claimed she was mukareis. The third case, she said the guy I was talking to was a mesila kahuna. And in the fourth case, she said the guy who got me pregnant was mesila kahuna. All right, now, ilay ma'ah, we're going to roll backwards. Take the fourth case. I tell Mubarak, Vemala Mati Boshal Uwarzet. Each point of the coin who, right, that's the Mishnah. So in other words, she's pregnant, and she claims the guy is Macy Lukuhuna, and for the kid is kosher, and she's kosher, and Rabbi Shua says we don't believe her. But what Migo is it Rabbi Shua is not accepting there? Hatamai Migo Ika. There's no Migo. Hare Kreso, and she's pregnant. There's no Migo. She can't say, well, I could have lied and said I'm not pregnant. That's impossible. Elaha, so let's go back to the third case. She was speaking to a guy. She said, they asked her, who was the guy you were talking to? I'm talking, of course, euphemism for either seclusion or bia. She says he was a good guy, a Kohen. Right? And she's the chazaka, she's nibala lenotim lamamza until she proves differently. Again, hatamai migo iko. What kind of migo did she have that we're saying, or Beshua doesn't accept that migo, but he accepts this migo? Migo is like a pesha asa, saying, if I wanted to lie, I got a better lie to say. Since I didn't give that better lie, believe me in this other one. All right. So, according to Ziri, there really is a migo. What does midaberet mean? It means seclusion. Now, she's admitting she had bia. She could have said, you know what, I never had bia, and we have to believe her. And the fact that she admits to bia, so there's a migo that supports her claim that the guy was a good guy. So my medaberet nistera migo di bayamra lo nivalti become nivalti. Since she could have said lo nivalti and she admits she had relations, mehemna, so we believe her that the guy is good. So that's where Gamliel does believe, Rabbi Yeshua doesn't, and then here Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, yeah, but this migo I do accept. That would be one way to read it. Elo the Ravasi, but remember Ravasi said medaberet means nivala. We just had this two or three sessions ago. My medaberet nivalet. My migo ika. What kind of migo does she have? So according to Ravasi, we can't interpret our Mishnah as being Modi Rabbi Yeshua in reference to case number 3 of Medaberet, because it's not like he's saying, I don't accept that Migo, I accept this. There is no Migo there. So now we have to roll back to case 2. All right, where he says, Petach Patuach Matzati, she says, Mukar Eitzani, and he says, no, you were had relations. If you recall, there was a machloket amoraim as to what the dispute was. Are they arguing about 200 versus 100 or 100 versus nothing? So ha necham zarhata mamigo ika. So bishlam the rabbi lazer amar memane velo klum. Because after all, if she says if she really was a mukat eight, she's going to get 100, and if she was really Jewish, she'll get nothing, and that's what they're disputing. So if that's the case, then Migo Divaya Amra Mukar Eitz Ani Tachtecha. Because she could have lied and said, I was a Mukar Eitz after you betrothed me, which is Nizach Pasadeu, beat them on time, and I get 200. The fact that I say I was a Mukar Eitz before, you should believe me, I get 100. That's a Migo. A Mikar, the late Lai Alamane, Nehema. Rabbi Yochanan done my time and wanted that the machlokes about 200 or 100, because if she's a mukareit she'll get 200, and if she's not she'll get 100, then my migo ika, then there's no migo because she has no better claim. In other words, she's nothing she could have claimed that would have gotten her a better position, because what she's claiming her gets the best possible, which is 200. So case number two will not work either. Elaha, we have to go back to case number one. Hanosei ta'isha v'lo matzah la v'tulim v'mer nishir astanin anasti nistach fasadeh. All right, so a man marries a woman, doesn't find betulim. She claims that she was raped, but after the betrothal, and it was under your purview, and you lose. He says, no, you were raped before, and you came in under fraudulent terms. She could have said mukad etzani, and not admitted to having any relations. And how is that better for her? Because then, if let's say her husband dies, she can marry a kohen. Now she's admitting that she was raped, and she's saying it was tachtecha, which means that yeah, right now she's mutter to the husband, but she's psula the kohuna. Right? Bekamer and astik kafasan afshemi kohuna. And she's making a claim that's hurting her more, putting her in a worse position. That's what Gamliel believes her because she has a migo. And so that's what Rabbi Yeshua is mode. He's saying to Rabbi Gamliel, the migo in our case, when the guy says, I bought the field from your father, and your father owned it, but I bought it from him, I agree with you. But the migo in the first parak, I don't accept. Right? Now we got to ask, why is Rabbi Yeshua being flexible, shall we say, with accepting a migo? That he doesn't accept the migo in the first parak, but he accepts the migo here. In other words, when the woman says, I could have said, she didn't say this, but she could have said, I was a mukar eitz tachtecha, I get 200. And instead, she comes and says, or shall we say, she could have said, I was mukar eitz tachtecha, and gotten 200. And instead, she says, I was nenasti tachtecha, v'nestach fasadeyu, which puts her in a worse position, psulukuna, and therefore we're going to believe her that it was tachtav. So why is Rabbi Yeshua not accept that migo, but he accepts the migo here? Where the guy says, the field belonged to your father and I bought it from him. So the answer is, Mechte amigo, amigo, maishna, amigo, amigo. Hacha in shachut lefanecha, atam shor shachut lefanecha. Literally, in that case, there is, in our case, there is no damaged animal, as it were, sitting in front of you. In other words, in our case, in the field, it's not like the claimant, the guy is a claimant coming and saying, you took my father's field. The guy doesn't know anything about it. The only person initiating any information is the fellow who's claiming he owns the field. And he comes up and he says, that's my field. It was your father's, but I bought it. And the other guy says, I didn't even know my father ever owned it. So that's not a case where the other fellow was raising any issues. Here, there's a shor shachut. Here, the guy comes to his marital bed and finds things aren't the way they're supposed to be, the way that he expected, so he comes and makes a claim. So Yeshua says, in such a case, we don't accept a migo. And there's a very good psychology behind this, very good reason behind this. Because after all, when the fellow was accusing her, as it were, so perhaps she's uncomfortable saying a big lie, so she doesn't have a migo, because what's the migo? The migo is that she would have been ready to say a bigger lie, that which she would have been believed, and would have gotten her in a better position. The fact that she didn't, we should believe her about this other statement. But maybe that's not the case when she's on the hot seat. But in the case of the field, nobody's on the hot seat. And therefore, we should believe the guy. But now, parenthetically, you just told me that the reason that we would have thought that Rabbi Gamliel even here would say that she's believed without witnesses is because her claim that she was a betula is like a bari b'shema, since most girls get married as betulot. But think about that. Kevin, this woman, obviously nobody knows. That's why we need the witnesses. Nobody knows that she was a betula when she got married. If witnesses don't show up, so what is that? Still what? Shouldn't we follow the rove and say, she says betula, he says almana, we have a rove supporting the fact that she's betula. Because you could argue the opposite way. Most weddings are a girl the first time. You take 10 weddings, 8 of them or so are going to be a girl getting married for the first time.
Watch the formulation, it's a little tricky. Anybody who gets married as a betula has a call, meaning everybody hears about it. Since this girl does not have a call, meaning people aren't talking about it. Oh yeah, she was a betula, she got married. Therefore, she loses the rove. Now wait a second. If it's true that every girl who is a betula gets married, everybody's talking about the wedding, and nobody's talking about this wedding, nobody remembers it, then doesn't that mean that really we have pretty good proof she was an almana? These witnesses are lying. Because they're telling us that she was a betula, but we know that every girl who's a betula who gets married, according to the assumption, we all know about it. And this one we don't know. So these guys are lying. Elam Ravino, have to reform that. Most cases where a betula gets married, people are hear about the wedding, it's famous, but sometimes you have a quiet wedding, people don't know about it. Since this one doesn't have a call, her rove is kind of diminished. Meaning, she walks in and says, I was married as a petula. And really, rove supports her contention because most weddings involve a petula. However, the fact that nobody remembers a wedding, and most times that a petula gets married, everybody remembers the wedding, chips into the rove, and it's kind of one rove in favor, one rove against, it's kind of left in the middle, and that's why we need aid. Good. So now, she's coming to one Beit Din in one town and saying, I have witnesses here that I went out with Behinuma. Obviously, she's lost her ketubah, because if she had her ketubah, there'd be no question. So she comes in and brings Edim, she went out Behinuma and collects from the estate 200. But I'm off going ketubah my Beit Din. Then she'll go to another Beit Din, take out the ketubah and says, I'm owed 200. Begav Yaba. I won't be afraid of that. Shouldn't we say, unless you have the ketubah, you collect nothing? So Rav says that proves that we do, and this is a contested issue, that we do write a receipt. In other words, when the family or the husband, the ex-husband, pays off, he gets a receipt that he paid the ketubah. Papa Mar Malkom Shen Kotvin Ketubah Skinner. Papa says no. Our Mishnah could be referring to a case where it's a locale where they don't have the minhag to write a ketubah. Because they don't write a ketubah. But rather, there's an assumed debt, which is that if she's a petula, it's 200 plus whatever he adds, and an almana, it's 100. The ikar matni la brayta. Some people learned these two solutions as a solution to the following brayta. If da ktubata, let's say she lost the ktuba, itmina ktubata, or she buried it. Nisufa ktubata was burned. Rakdula faneha, and we have witnesses that they danced in front of her. Sichakula faneha, they did all of the shtick. It's done at weddings. They passed the kosher basara. We'll see what that is at the beginning of tomorrow, of the next podcast. Mapashal betulim, another sort of thing. All these customs, in other words, the ketubah is lost, but there's also the testimony that they did things at her wedding that indicated she was a betulah. And yesh la'idim b'chad mikol eilu, which has testimony, any of that, ketubah tamatayim. And now what do you see? You see here's a situation where they wrote a ketubah. Haraya, it was lost or burned. So why aren't we afraid in that case that she's going to take her these edim, say that they passed a cup of wine in front of her, whatever, best sealed barrel, whatever it may be, and collect her 200, and then she hid her ketubah, and now she pull it out and go into another Beit Din and collect? So the same solutions. You see what you write in a receipt. No, it's talking about a place where they don't write a ketubah. Now, how can you say it's talking about a case where they don't write a ketubah? Part of the series of problems, of variations of the problem that lead to this ruling, are where she lost the ketubah. So the answer is the chatab la'il. It's a place where they don't write a ketubah. He wrote one on his own. So we still have the same problem. We're still back to square one, which is she'll use edim in one beit din and their ketubah in another beit din. So my ibda ba'ur. So what does ibda mean? She lost it, meaning she lost it in the fire. Meaning it was not lost, and we don't know where it is. It was lost, we saw it burned up. Yachi an nisrafa, but we already said, lost or burned. So if lost is burned, why have two different things? What do you mean, Michael Aaron? What are you going to say about the other clause, which is she buried it? The two, ibda lamali, and also why add in, she lost it, if losing it is burning it up? Why have all the different clauses? And the answer is, anytime she loses it, it's as if she buried it right in our presence. Meaning, if she buries it right in our presence, we're going to say, pull it out, and we'll see what's written. The only time that we will pay her without the ketubah is if Edim come and say, we saw it burned up. Okay, good. So that's the solution to that. Now, man demani la braita. Remember, we had Rabbi Avahu saying we write a shovar, or Papa saying, no, let's talk about a case where they don't write a ketubah. And they were solutions to either our Mishnah or this braita. So man demani la a braita, the one who sees it as a solution for the braita, kol shekene matnit, and will certainly see it as a solution to our Mishnah. But if, and somebody sees it as a solution, read it as a solution on the Mishnah, they won't apply it to the Braita, because remember we have that difficulty with Ivdaktu Vata, Nisifaktu Vata, Igminaktu Vata. So there has to be a place where they do write a Ketubah, and then you really do have to come to the conclusion that you write a Shovar. Okay. In Yeshe Dim, the last piece we're going to see, said, V'leichus Dom Mafka, Edehi Numa Vahai Beitin Vagavia, Hadam Mafka, Edehi Numa Beitin Vachria Vagavia. Now we have a problem that has nothing to do with writing a ketubah. She'll bring they had 100 people to the wedding, 1,000 people to the wedding. She'll bring two witnesses and one beit din and said she wore a hinuma, whatever that is, something that's worn only by betulot at their wedding. And then she'll go to another beit din and bring two other witnesses. They don't know that she brought two witnesses. She'll bring two other witnesses who were at the wedding and give the same testimony, and she'll collect again. So the answer is, when Malcolm Goloff Shavada Kathir and Shover there, we certainly have to write a receipt. Now, by the way, why do we not want to write a receipt? Because we don't want the husband to have to be, or the estate to have to be saddled with watching this thing and making sure it doesn't get lost and everything else for however long. It could be generations, because she'll have the descendants will come and make a claim. So we don't want them to have to do that. We want, once you pay it off, to be finished, not to worry. That's why we prefer not to write a shovar. But of course, in a case like this, where the testimony is coming down to eyewitnesses at the wedding, claiming what they saw, you certainly have to have a shovar. Otherwise, every 5 minutes, she's going to go to another beit din, bring to other witnesses, and collect another 200. So we have completed our first podcast on Perek Sheni. We'll just have in the next podcast, we'll pick up from here and continue until the middle of Yod Zayin Amud Bet, and then the next podcast, complete the Mishnah.